Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is Sunday, September 8th, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all. We'll start today with our morning prayer.
From page 16 of the Addenda of Collectania by Mary Baker Eddy. Today, he who has made thee whole will keep thee day by day. He who hath spoken to thy soul hath many things to say. He who had gently taught, yet more will make thee know. He who hath wonders wrought, still greater things will show. He loveth always, faileth never, then rest in him today, forever.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Okay, and just one reminder, we start our Bible study next Saturday, September 14th at 10 a.m. So far, our assignment's been to read Amos. Are there any more questions up? Yes, okay, the questions are up. Okay, the watching point for this week.
Watch number 27. Watch lest you believe that you are trying to perfect yourself rather than make a channel of yourself through which the perfect idea of man may be expressed. There is a distinction between trying to make a perfect man of yourself and trying to express the perfect man through yourself. There is a difference between washing a window because you like to see the glass clean or because you desire to have the light shine through perfectly. End quote.
Thank you. Okay, comments on that?
I think this is a big deal, to be the channel. I've really been thinking about that, and it's good.
Thank you. It is a big deal. As I have spoken, I tried for years not understanding this, trying to make myself better, and it did not work. Only when I got this concept of humility, I can of mine own self do nothing, that real changes began to take place. And I realized this was never about me, what I could achieve, even if what I desired, my goals seemed noble. It had nothing to do with me. It has to do with God and God's purpose for you and you getting out of the way and letting him use you. Mrs. Eddy said herself that she did her best work when Mary got out of the way.
And what are some of the obstacles to actually being able to do this?
Self-will, pride.
Pride, thank you. Pride. Because pride says, I want to look good, right? I don't want to upset people. And where is God in that? Nowhere. Zippo.
Anyone else?
This is just wanted to add that I think it. What is being said here is flies in the face of most of the, I guess, self-improvement literature and that whole arena of advice that is given out about improving yourself versus what is being said here, which is letting God use you. It's a big step and a major point and very important to everyone to absorb that and use that and understand that.
Thank you. Very true. That's a very important point. Thank you. Yes, all these self-help books. Improve yourself.
I see false traits as animal magnetism trying to do that to me. And I always reject it. It's no part of me.
Yeah, it always is animal magnetism. Whether it calls itself pride or fear or negativity.
And be careful when you say you always reject it.
Yeah, none of us always reject it. We all can do that.
Well, I mean, it's no part of my real being.
Oh,
and I recognize that. I have to keep on.
Right.
And working with this is forcing me to look at how I look at other people, to see them as God's channels and to love them, and to reject all those thoughts that come in about this person is stubborn or self-righteous or whatever. That can't be. And that's something that I'm working on and I'm very grateful for.
Good. Thank you, Debbie.
Well, I feel that it's always wrong to ever judge in any way someone else. And I don't let thoughts like that come into my mind, because that's hate. That's a form of hate. And Christ said, judge not that ye be not judged. And the slightest thought of, oh, that woman is, those are ugly clothes or whatever. I don't let it come into my thought. If anything starts to, I think of something positive right off.
Good. Sermon on the Mount. All right. Who would like to read the golden text, 1 Corinthians? Okay. Speak up.
By the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace, which was bestowed upon me, was not in vain. But I labored more abundantly than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God, which was with me.
Thank you. As I've said, this is one of my many favorite passages in the Bible. And I was not aware of it until I had watched this movie years ago called The Express, which was the Ernie Davis story, which was about a poor boy in poverty whose father his grandfather used to read this to him in the morning before he would go to school. Such a powerful statement. And in doing that, this child eventually got a Heisman Trophy. He was a very outstanding athlete, rose up out of great poverty. And who was it? I guess Joanne wrote about it on the forum. The definition of grace, the free, unmerited love and favor of God, the spring and source of all the benefits men receive from him, the divine influence in renewing the heart and restraining from sin. Webster 1828 Dictionary. We're all privy to this grace, aren't we?
Yes.
And if we are open to it and see it and are grateful for it and grateful for God in our life, this grace comes to us. It's hard even to explain what it is. So wondrous. Chorus will sing Amazing Grace today. Anyone else on this grace?
I was thinking about how it was bestowed upon us, not in vain. And I don't know, I think before coming here and even a little bit into coming here, I had a lot of self-doubt and like, maybe somebody else should be doing this kind of thing. So to know that what he has given us to do is not in vain is I think that's really wonderful.
It really is.
I sometimes I hear, you know, it's hard for me. I can't feel that I'm loving God. And I feel that when we really appreciate this grace and, you know, think of the grace, I don't know, in anyone's life, it's being shown. And so if we can really think of it, how much this grace is being poured onto us, how much it has redeemed us, it can but help you love him.
That's so true.
I looked up a definition for grace in it and found something that says the divine influence on the heart that shows forth in the life.
Thank you. I have this very special definition of grace, which I couldn't find this morning, but that was part of it, the divine influence on the heart, which changes, redeems you. It is a divine influence. It's hard even to explain because it's divine, and we speak in human terms. Now, as was said, Nancy mentioned it before, what we need to obtain it is really this humility. Parthen sent to me, and I'll have Jeremy put it on the carousel this week. It's an article called Character by Mrs. Eddy. It was written, or it was from an 1893 Christian Science journal. And she speaks of the importance of character, what it takes to have a good character. But in speaking about it, she talks about no real character can be achieved when there is a lack of genuine, true humility. Humility is a virtue which but few have any right perception regarding. It is associated with weakness instead of strength. So that too frequently appears as servility, a sort of despicable quality such as Dickens has caricatured in his Uriah Heep. He was a character that was false sense of humility. I believe it was in David Copperfield. But this is not humility, for genuine humility is freedom from all sense of false pride and mad ambition, maintaining at all times a calm, steady equipoise of temper and mind. It is that quality which enables one to know himself and never allows its possessor to be thrown off his guard or balance. And that's because when you've got this true humility, you're on your knees to God. So God is directing your every path. And when that happens, you can't be thrown off.
And when God directs you, it's never in vain.
Well, at the beginning of miscellaneous writing, she speaks of humility as the stepping stone to a higher recognition of deity. The mounting sense gathers fresh forms and strange fire from the ashes of dissolving self and drops the world.
Yes, that's beautiful for Mrs. Eddy. To understand God more, this is a most precious quality to have. And it is throughout this lesson. Certainly, you see in the story of the Magdalene and the Pharisee, it was the Magdalene who expressed the humility toward the Christ, while the Pharisee was full of self-righteousness, wasn't he?
Oh, he gave the party, so he thought he
gave, yeah, he was the man. So, and as we know, this story is in the very beginning of what chapter in Science and Health?
Healing, Christian Science
Healing.
Yes.
Practice.
Christian Science practice. Because you cannot practice science unless you have humility. It's impossible. And if you start out with it and the pride comes in, you'll lose it. You can't do it. You absolutely cannot practice this science without humility. And I love 2 Corinthians number 9. Do you want to read it, Jeffrey? 9 in the Bible.
And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness.
What does that mean? Thank you.
I think if we feel like we got it all together, we're not going to be looking to him. But if we know that we don't have the strength to get through what we got to do, then we will lean on him.
Yes. Thank you very much. And as we've talked about it, what would happen when Gideon or Moses or some of these people were asked to go forth and do some achievement? What was their first response?
I'm the least in my house.
Yeah, right. I'm the least in my house, you mean? Yeah. And I love where Mrs. Eddy says, as Mary Baker Eddy, I am the weakest of mortals, but as the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, I am what?
The sinew and
the bone and sinew of the world. Mm-hmm. She knew it. It's why how she could survive by being this humility. The darts flew over her head. That's why in the hymn, the arrow that doth wound the dove darts not from those who watch and love. It's also how Eustace survived. It's how Carpenter survived when they were excommunicated, demeaned, terrible things said about them. Do you have that from the Red Book to read, Florence?
I have it right here. Hold on.
Florence found something most beautiful in the Red Book on page 80.
I thought you were going to...
I have it if you don't.
I don't have it, sorry.
Okay, and then we'll read it then.
Give me a second. I have it. I have it.
Good. You found it.
Mrs. It's in page 80 of the Red Book, and she says that, I don't care what mortal sense has done. I don't care how it has beat me and worked me and insulted me, wronged me and lied to me, and tortured me. It is all past, and it is a dream. I have found love at last. I can lie down in the Father's arms and be at peace. I love God supremely. Mortal sense has done its worst. I have passed through the Red Sea and under the rod, and been nailed to the cross, and still I am God's own child, hid with Christ in his arms, safe in green pastures. Life, truth and love, mind, spirit, soul, all these express God. My dear ones, when, oh when, will you realize what these mean?
Thank you. In order to survive that, the greatest amount of humility must be there. You just have to know your whole being, everything about you is in God. And that keeps you safe in the secret place of the Most High, which is most important. And if I can find this one, this was in No and Yes on page 34, which I'm not finding, but I'm here with the matter. I had it all marked. Anyway, Mrs. Eddy is talking about physical torture. And as I've said, thank you, Gary. Got it. Torture is one of my least favorite words in the English language. She mentioned it in what Florence just read, but she says, Mrs. Eddy, on page 34, because she knew, physical torture affords but a slight illustration of the pangs which come to one upon whom the world of sense falls with its leaden weight in the endeavor to crush out of a career its divine destiny. And what did you find out career means?
Oh yeah, I looked up career just to make sure I knew the meaning, and I had always thought it meant like, you know, your long term, what you did over a lifetime, but according to the 1828 Webster's, it was, you know, basically the course or race that you are running, and it's more of an immediate thing. So I was glad for the immediate thing because it's not an eventual. I got to be on guard now. So.
Thank you. Yes. And you see, once you've named the name of the science and you've taken this path, Arrow would like to crush out of you that endeavor. And none of us are given anything more than what we can handle. I mean, Mrs. Evans, yes, Christ Jesus, I mean, they crucified him for this. But his understanding was so deep, he had the resurrection. Mrs. Eddy, too. None of us are given more than what we can handle when we lean and trust on the bosom of God. But it will try. It will try to get you to stop this path in many different ways. Usually it comes through your nearest and dearest to get you to stop. But if you impersonalize it and see that it's trying to crush out of your career, your divine destiny, you won't be tricked or fooled by it. It's like going through the psychologist cave. You'll see it for what it is and you'll keep walking. And then, because you've been proven faithful, whatever it is will suddenly disappear. It'll go.
And the reason it goes is because God's grace is sufficient.
Thank you.
Yes.
For you.
Absolutely.
For you.
Where is that quote about the divine destiny crushing out? Where is that?
On page 34 of No and Yes.
Thank you.
So many of you, in many ways, have felt it to a greater or lesser degree. And when you're going through it, it does feel like a crushing weight. And sometimes you feel tortured or tormented. In our cases, it's mainly a mental thing. It's not physical. We're not fighting wars, thank God. Our country isn't. Other places are. But it would try everything it could to get you to stop. Impersonalize it. See what it's trying to do. Hang on to your divine destiny, which is your oneness with the Father, your obedience to God, what he's given you to do, whatever it might be. And we're all individual. We all have different things that we are to fulfill in this life. But it's the most precious, one of the most precious things we have is this purpose in life, fulfilling God's purpose for us. And it's always about overcoming what?
Error.
Yeah. Error. The beliefs of mortal mind, the carnal mind.
Which are false and have no power unless you give it to it.
We have to, I feel, the self-will too, because it's when one has a certain ambition, I want to achieve this. I say this because of the, you know, case things that people say, that they want a particular thing, you know, it's as if, oh, I've given it to God, or I'm working as, but then you still have your thought on something you want so much. I think that comes in the way. It's to surrender it all.
Mm-hmm. And that's the materiality. Yes. There's certain things you want. And you've come to Christian Science because you want things. And it might be, you know, your physical healing. It might be, you know, a certain job. It might be finding your perfect mate. It could be a whole list of things. And in science, many people have gotten this, all of this. And frankly, it doesn't mean much if it's crushed out your divine destiny. You can get all those things. If it hasn't brought you to closer to God, what good is it? But if you hang on to that purpose, then everything begins to make sense. And no matter how difficult the time is, because you're in that secret place of the Most High, it's difficult, but it's also wondrous. And just as that beautiful passage that Florence read, what did she say at the end? It didn't matter what the world threw at her. At the end, she felt the love of God.
She found the peace in Christ.
The peace that passes all understanding. It's worth every moment. Now, if you're not interested in your divine destiny, if you just live in your human life and la-di-da and you're okay with the whole thing, air will most likely leave you alone. Although you could have, sometimes people end up with incredible tragedies, but some people seem to sail through okay. Mm-hmm. And there's that quote that something doesn't shoot at dead men. I think it's just error doesn't shoot at dead men. If you're of no use to God, it'll probably leave you alone. That's not good.
I think that's also it's okay.
No, go ahead.
No, I said that's why also you have to be careful not to say, oh, well, I'm doing this and look at all the trouble I'm having. This person is not doing anything and look, their life is better. You don't know.
That's exactly right. That is a huge no-no in Christian Science. I cannot emphasize that enough. And I have seen it with scientists. And I used to do it, I'm sure. I'm a Christian Scientist. And how come my life isn't going as well as my neighbor's over there? And she's not a Christian Scientist. And talk about wine. And talk about not knowing what you're saying, because you need to focus on yourself, your own vineyard, and not be so concerned judging or whatever else. And that is a form of judging. We talk about judging negatively, but saying, oh, look, they're having it so great. You don't know what they're having. You figure out what you need to do and stay focused on that. It's worse than a waste of time. And as a scientist, it is a sin and you won't make progress.
And that's why comparisons are odious.
Most definitely. So, anyway, thank you for bringing that up.
Competition is terrible.
Competition, it's all materiality. It has nothing to do in Christ. Materiality. And it's all the tricks and the ploys of the devil. That's why we stay with the Ten Commandments, which says, thou shalt not covet. Stay with these truths. You know them. You work with them. And this is sometimes why you sweat blood. It's not easy all the time, but you're purifying yourself of the carnal mind and all the et ceteras of that. And sometimes it's a fiery furnace to go through, but it's all well worth it. Now I'll have Gary read what Parthens wrote.
Okay, quote, man in God's image is unfallen and eternal, end quote, Science and Health. In chemistry, noble metals belong to a class of elements that are resistant to corrosion, such as gold and silver. For example, the gold coin minted in Britain at the time of Edward III was called a noble. Whereas metals such as iron become irreversibly changed by corrosion through exposure to oxygen, noble metals have a high resistance to reacting with any elements or compounds in their environment that could cause corrosion. They are so stable that they cannot readily attract to themselves the least substance that could so affect them. Similarly, in chemistry, the noble gases are so named because of their stability, whereas other elements can react with one another to form compounds that can change their basic identity beyond recall. The noble gases display very little tendency to react with other elements. It is useful to think of these noble elements as symbolic of God's child being a law unto himself or herself, having an established, secure, unfallen, and eternal identity in Christ. God's man is a generic term for the noble man or woman who has attained the high calling of God. anyone who has achieved understanding of his, her oneness with God, known as God's very own image and likeness, an eternal state of invincible stability that does not react with his, her environment in unstable ways. Jesus demonstrated this principle by subjecting himself to the most convulsive of stressful environments before and during his crucifixion. Through it all, he had this testimony, quote, "The prince of this world cometh and findeth nothing in me," end quote. John 14. Man is the noblest work of God, hymn 51. God's image is more noble than the noblest of material elements. God has endowed you, me, everyone, with the ability to remain stable, incorruptible, non-corrodible, steadfast, immovable, regardless of our surroundings. Like the three Hebrew children who remained unaffected by the superheated flames surrounding them in the fiery furnace.
Thank you. This is extremely important. This is why you study during the day, in the mornings, when you get up, while you pray, while you say the daily duties. I think that was in Linda's forum. What we work with every week. It's why we have these times together to maintain your oneness, so you stay de-mesmerized by everything else that's going on in the world that's trying to pull you into its clutches. It's a whole purpose. And if you do this, and if you maintain your oneness, you are noble. You are the son or daughter of the king. You have the knowing, the alertness to duty, being a law unto yourself, all of these things. This is why we do it. Now, I'm going to get into something very sobering, as if what we've been talking about hasn't been. Anyway, this was something we got many years ago when Mrs. Evans was here. We've read it. We've been familiar with it. And I was gratefully reminded about it by Dale W. in Virginia. It is on the website, right? Or what I'm part of it is, a little bit?
It is. It's on the books part of the website.
Okay. The name, it's a little pamphlet called Brainwashing, a Synthesis of Russian Textbook on Psychopolitics. It was written by someone, Beria, a Soviet secret police chief. Okay, and this was many years ago. It first came out in the 20s and 30s.
So I just want to say that, I'm sorry, that book is not on our website.
No.
The Hartsook.
The Hartsook, yes. Hartsook wrote about this. It was in the 80s, and that part, and one of the things I'm going to quote from it is, now, we'll begin by impersonalizing this.
It written by Beria? You mean by the Russian?
Yes, it was written by Beria, the Russian.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Now, but we're going to impersonalize. It doesn't matter. It was saying Russian, Soviets, and all of that. But what is it ultimately?
Animal magnetism.
Animal magnetism. Okay, because otherwise if we get into whatever, then we think we have this enemy. The enemy is always animal magnetism. But this is what animal magnetism is saying. Okay. The first thing to be degraded in any nation is the state of man himself. Nations which have high ethical tone are difficult to conquer. It is not efficient to attack a nation in such a frame of mind. It is the basic purpose of psychopolitics to reduce that state of mind to a point where it can be ordered and enslaved. Thus, the first target is man himself. He must be degraded from a spiritual being to an animalistic reaction pattern. He must think of himself as an animal capable only of animalistic reactions. He must no longer think of himself or of his fellows as capable of spiritual endurance or nobility. This felt, all of these things, I'm telling you, when I pray during the week about what to talk about at the round table, it's as if I can barely catch all these ideas that come. And all of you give me ideas. Dale this week, and almost always Parthens in what he writes. I mean, this went right along with knowing your nobility, your immunity to such suggestions, which is trying to tear down your spirituality, your relationship with God, so that you can be mesmerized and enslaved. This is what the carnal mind does. And in belief, this is what opposing nations do.
But that's just because, what is the carnal mind? It is a lie and a liar and the father of it. It is the belief that there is a power other than God. And as a result of that belief, those who believe it believe that they don't have enough. So they want what other people have. So they will commit atrocities against mankind to gain what other people have. It is the basis of all war. And the warfare is still going on, folks. There are billions of people who believe that they are mere mortals and that they need to struggle. And there are people in political power around the world who believe that their job is to mobilize people to take over other countries or to steal from other countries. I mean, it's going on. We see it in the news. And we feel it in our hearts. So this is not something to be frightened by, but it is certainly not something to be ignored. And it is not something that can be handled in a personal or materialistic way. The only way it can be handled is impersonally and through Christian Science.
Yes. Because we know the impersonal nature of it. Christianity does wonderful things and it's based on the teachings of Christ, but it is Mrs. Eddy. You know, I was very saddened when I was looking for this quote about her being the bone and sinew of the world. I was Googling it, and she came up as an American writer on Google. This is why we know she's a woman in the apocalypse. What she did, what she wrote, was divine. And as Florence read, what she went through to achieve this message, this divine message from God, is amazing. So this continues. As it seems in foreign nations that the church is the most ennobling influence, each and every branch and activity of each and every church must one way or another be discredited. In the field of pure healing, the Church of Christ Scientist of Boston, Massachusetts, excels in commanding the public favor and operates many sanitariums. All these must be swept aside. They must be ridiculed and defamed, and every cure they advertise must be asserted as a hoax. A full fifth of psychopolitician's time should be devoted to smashing these threats, just as in Russia we had to destroy, after many, many years of the most arduous work, the church. So we must destroy all faiths in nations marked for conquest. You recruit every agency of the nation marked for slaughter into a foaming hatred of religious healing. You must suborn district attorneys and judges into an intense belief as fervent as an ancient faith in God, that Christian Science or any other religious practice which might devote itself to mental healing is vicious, bad, insanity-causing, publicly hated, and intolerable. We have battled in America since the centuries turned to bring to nothing and all Christian influences, and we are succeeding. While we today seem to be kind to the Christian, remember we have yet to influence the Christian world to our ends. When that is done, we shall have an end of them everywhere. You must work until religion is synonymous with insanity. You must work until the officials of city, county, and state governments will not think twice before they pounce upon religious groups as public enemies. We must be like the vine upon the tree. We use the tree to climb, and then, strangling it, grow into power on the nourishment of its flesh.
This is the playbook for communism and socialism around the world.
And as a Christian Scientist, you've got to understand this. And when Christianity is being attacked, they're our brothers. It'll first the Jews, then the Christians, and then that's what they did in Nazi Germany. Christian Science was the last to be attacked, but it was. You've got to understand it and see this workings. How do we handle animal magnetism? What are the three things?
See what it's trying to do. Know that it can't.
Can do it. And sure it doesn't.
Yes. So.
So this is the first step. Let's see what it's trying to do. It shouldn't be that hard.
Well, we got the book of what they're trying to do.
Exactly. And there are many others that are telling you it's no longer even a secret. Some people just turn a blind eye, or they say, oh, you know, you're reacting, or this is racist, or it's not.
Or
it's,
you're crazy.
Or you're crazy.
That's what they wanted.
Yes.
Exactly.
They call the Christians crazy. And I'm telling you, Hollywood is a great source of this, the attack of Christianity and the Christian values. And any time I feel it or smell it at all, I don't look at it. I refuse, because it's a form of propaganda. That doesn't mean, and I would never say that all Christians are perfect. No, they're not, but it's a higher form of life to be following Christ's path the best they can. And of course, we understand Christ, Christianity as Christian Science is the ultimate answer. And so we use our science, and all this goes along with the lesson man, doesn't it? Because when you know you're noble, you know your oneness with the Father, you cannot be mesmerized. This is why this little booklet attacks us the way it does. Mrs. Evans used to teach us this. These are more of the private teachings. And there are many teachings that go on in our church that I don't give in this respect. But now, because so much is out there, I feel like I have to tell you to protect yourself, to defend yourself of this. Otherwise, you will be misled. And they'll make you think right is wrong and wrong is right. They will.
Could I add something here?
Please.
I found this very significant, that the attack was on the church, basically in Boston, because of what they were doing. And the key is that Boston denied Mrs. Eddy's manual, that all branches should be independent and there shouldn't be any main control from one church. If everyone was independent and working with God, they could not do this.
And that is, thank you, that is something that I was going to get to, because it was in the Hartsook. Hartsook brings this out. He says, the Communist Party of the Soviet Union targeted the Boston headquarters. And in chapter 14, entitled The Smashing of Religious Groups. But he says, the centralization of power and authority has resulted not only in damage by well-meaning scientists, but has also perhaps enabled hostile elements to infiltrate the headquarters and thereby damage the movement, which would have been impossible to do in the decentralized movement which Mrs. Eddy intended in the 88th manual. There would have been so many independent churches all over the place that there were too many fires to put out. But instead, because they centralized it, it became an organization which degraded into the human mind, and it was ripe for infiltration.
It was an easy target for the enemy. And that's why Mrs. Eddy saw this. She knew it. She saw it coming. That's why she was led to leave the 88th manual the way it was. That's why she set up the publishing department as a separate trust, totally separate from the church.
Yes.
That's why she put the estoppel clauses in there.
She understood all of this, and she saw what was going to happen. But she did all that she could. And then she had to say, oh, all right, you're going to have to learn for yourself. And if you don't understand now, our nation and the churches and Christianity is being attacked on every front. Prayer taken out of the school. People call crazy when they, you know, want certain things. You're called crazy. All of this, I sorry, if I hear that, it curdles me, and it should curdle you too, because if you're going along with and saying, oh yeah, they are, and why they're so hateful in some instances, that is just what the enemy wants you to believe. Part of this ends with the spread of communism has never been by force or battle, but by the conquest of the mind. In psychopolitics, we have refined this conquest to the last degree. And they have said they won't come in. They don't want a physical war. They'll come in and work within the country to wipe out the family, Christian values, all of this, and get us to think to be turned against it in some way. And they're working now. And certainly they've worked in the movement. So,
and then they've taken over a lot of our universities.
Yes, they have.
They're infiltrating a lot of the school districts and the public school districts. So it appears that they are succeeding.
And God forbid we, any of us, are asleep to it. I was very touched because Florence sent me her high school emblem. And what does it say, Florence?
Live pure, talk true, right wrong, follow the king.
Isn't that beautiful? I thought, oh my goodness, if every school had that for an emblem, no wonder Florence turned out so.
Well, I mean, we're supposed to know. I mean, I appreciate it now more, I must say, than then. So it just struck me that, wow, this is what I was being told all that time.
Yes. It's beautiful. Those four things, and certainly follow the king.
But shouldn't that be basic for everyone? Yeah. I mean, for heaven's sake. Mm-hmm. Our country was established on these principles.
I think part of the problem, I'm sorry, I thought you were.
Go ahead.
What strikes me that other people need to be aware of is the secular world thinks, oh, well, who needs Christians anyways? They're just annoying. But when it's done with the Christians, it's not done. It's going to continue until it has complete control of everyone.
It is. It is. It is. So please, please don't be this Boston-y, do-goody, nice scientist that don't understand the foe in ambush and are just going along with all this. And thinking that you're so loving and kind and all this stuff. You're sound asleep is what you are.
There was a quote from somebody saying, it's impossible to enslave a Bible-reading nation.
Yes, yeah, that's been on our calendar. Mm-hmm. It is, and that's why we hold our Bibles and don't let anyone take it from us. You know, even more recently, I told you with the Red Cross, you're not allowed to, they built, put up these great big tents to help people who are, you know, whatever, the storms or things. Well, ministers are no longer allowed to take their Bible into the tents to share it with people in need. No, what Bible? Bible is hateful. They speak out against this, that, and the next thing. Well, a misinterpretation of it. We hold on to our Bibles and all of these things and any of this anti-Christian, you beware of it. Don't fall into it. I am telling you, it is working on you to do just that. Now, we're going to end. This is from the Communion, June 4th, 1899, and then I'll have Gary end with my favorite, one of my favorite Sunday services on the 4th of July. But Mrs. Eddy says, I reluctantly foresee great danger threatening our nation, imperialism, monopoly, and a lax system of religion. But the spirit of humanity, ethics, and Christianity sown broadcast, all co-commitments of Christian Science, is taking stronghold of the public thought throughout our beloved land and in foreign lands and is tending to counteract the trend of mad ambition, which is what it is, mad ambition, greed, and a form of insanity. That's the insane, not the ones who are practicing science Christianity. Yes. So the 4th of July address, Mary Baker Eddy. Miscellaneous Writings.
Page 177. Never was there a more solemn and imperious call than God makes to us all right here for fervent devotion and an absolute consecration to the greatest and holiest of all causes. The hour is come. The great battle of Armageddon is upon us. The powers of evil are leagued together in secret conspiracy against the Lord and against his Christ, as expressed and operative in Christian Science. Large numbers, in desperate malice, are engaged day and night in organizing action against us. Their feeling and purpose are deadly, and they have sworn enmity against the lives of our standard bearers. What will you do about it? Will you be equally in earnest for the truth? Will you doff your lavender kid zeal and become real and consecrated warriors? Will you give yourselves wholly and irrevocably to the great work of establishing the truth, the gospel, and the science, which are necessary to the salvation of the world from error, sin, disease, and death? Answer at once and practically, and answer aright.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.